Today's show is brought to you by Castwave Studios Fundraiser. Go to www.indiegogo.com/castwavestudios and contribute today. We are the podcast refugee nation. Be a part of it. Got Stitcher? We're on it. So get it. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
I don't see it.
Just a little lower.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did I get you?
Yes.
Well, gentlemen, it appears we have some competition on the Muppet property. The Economist says they've gotten back together again.
The Muppets got back together?
Oh, remember? Together again.
Oh, gee, it's good to be...
Gentlemen, please! No singing in my office.
Yes, sir. But of course, it was all his fault.
Mostly his fault.
No matter. Point is, that studio and that oil belong to me. Yeah, those Muppets are going to be running home with their tails between their legs. Some of them, literally. Because those ones have tails. Maniacal laugh. Maniacal laugh.
It's a maniacal laugh.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, Justin is not here, and I try my hardest to fill those vintage leather shoes. Also, we discuss Star Wars, and why George Lucas sucks. And finally, it's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. I'm Sean Holmes.
I'm Colin Kakinis.
I'm Brian Massey.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Hello and welcome to Boldly Going Nowhere, episode 68. I'm Sean Holmes.
I'm Colin Kakinis.
I'm Brian Massey.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
And this week has been a lovely week for looking forward to the summer. And in looking forward to summer, we have movies. Lots of summer movies coming out.
Yes.
And one of which we saw The Avengers, which we'll have our full review coming up as an actual podcast.
Yes.
For BGM the movies.
I can't wait.
Yes. I can't wait to listen back.
I can't wait to listen back to
what we already recorded.
Yeah. Oh, I wasn't going to say that. But
okay. Recently, we watched The People versus George Lucas. I showed this to Jordan, seeing it for the first time. Brian, have you saw?
I saw it for the first time just now.
So. Yes. It's on Netflix, and it ridicules what George Lucas done. But at the same time... You know,
it's interesting.
Admires him. It's a double-edged sword, if you will.
Exactly. I found it to be a much more two-sided kind of argument. Obviously, one side has a lot more ammunition than the other, but it still finds itself ways to be respectful.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, let's go ahead and introduce this properly, I guess. Let's talk about why we're talking about this real fast. Right. As you know, May 4th was May the 4th Be With You Day, or Star Wars Day. Mm-hmm. And so, on top of that, it was not only Star Wars Day, but it was also Free Comic Book Day, and The Avengers came out, all on the same weekend. So, as you can see, we're all kind of sitting around here just relaxing after this huge nerdgasm that we all had. So,
yes.
Does anyone have a nerd cigarette?
So we decided that, you know, Sean decided that we're just going to go ahead and watch The People versus George Lucas, which I guess is a play also on The People versus Larry Flint.
I would say just more so the title than anything else.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there have been trials of The People versus whomever for a long time beforehand.
Exactly. Yeah. There's been disappointment with, huge mass disappointment with one head figure for a long time. This one's just dealing with a person who made the entire thing to begin with that they're pissed off at.
Yeah.
So, Colin, what did you think of the movie, even though you saw it before, seeing it a second time?
Well, I love the movie. The movie is fairly entertaining. I mean, you obviously have the argument over once a film is released, is it left to the fans to decide its fate, or is it left to the original creator? Even if the original creator chooses to reimagine said product,
mm-hmm.
and thus alienating the fan base that made it popular in the first place.
I think the main argument that was in this movie wasn't the fact that he decided to make changes. It was that he decided to make changes, and at the same time, he decided to keep the original that people loved for years out of their grasp now. He was like, nope, you can't have that anymore. Putting this on the top shelf, you can't have this.
But that's always been a sticking point for me, because two of my other favorite movies are Ridley Scott's Blade Runner and Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Mm-hmm.
And both movies have multiple versions of them. Close Encounters has three: the original theatrical release, the theatrical re-release that came out 2 years afterwards that added on a couple extra scenes, including one really disastrous scene in which you see Richard Dreyfuss in the UFO and it looks like a warehouse with glowy orange lights. And that version has been expunged from the popular consciousness for a long time. And then recently came the final cut, which basically just touches up some of the special effects. And with Blade Runner, the theatrical cut was that was one that included the ultra happy ending and the narration. Harrison Ford's narration saying things that are either A, completely obvious, or B, not actually reflective of what's going on the screen. And when Ridley Scott came out with the director's cut, which cut all of that out, and the director's cut is what is most people remember from that movie. And then there was another retouching, and the changes are so minor I can't even name them off the top of my head. And then they came the final cut a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
which reshot the scene. Mostly what I remember from it is that it reshot the scene of the woman plowing through those multiple panes of glass.
Ah.
And that it looks a lot nicer, and they got the actress who did that before to do it again. And
I bet wasn't happy about that.
Probably not, but that one scene still, it's a small thing, but it looks nicer, and it's been, the picture's been cleaned up digitally. So what I'm saying is that these have, these multiple versions exist, but guess what? I own all of them. I picked up the box sets that include, of these two movies that include all those versions on one or multiple discs.
There's also something else that you own too,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is a great example, and this is what Lucas should have done. Look at the other Star Trek with the original series,
mm-hmm.
because they not only give you the remastered digital cut, but mm-hmm. they also give you the original TV airing in mono sound, no less.
Yes, exactly. The updates made to the original series of Star Trek are they're mostly shiny CGI spaceships,
mm-hmm.
out in the black. And some occasional retouches, like kind of chroma keying work of some of the more terrestrial scenes. Is it invasive? Not very. And honestly, I think the exterior space shots work so well, like they worked in Star Wars, because it's easier to make CG look in space because of the depth of field,
mm-hmm.
the inherent darkness of space. And in many ways, these effects actually add something more than they depict things that to save money, the actors just talk about. Like, Captain, there's three Klingon warbirds declucking off the port bow. And in the original series, they just didn't show that, but here we see it.
Yeah, like going back to Star Wars. I mean. The biggest issue there isn't that, it's talked about in the film way more in depth. Go take a look at it. You would agree, right? But, one of the big issues is stuff like, for instance, bringing in Jabba in episode 4, having Han not shoot first, stuff like that. Personally, I remember seeing the special editions in theaters, and I remember having seen the original cuts, but then I saw the special editions in theaters, and I was like, this is pretty cool. I liked what they did with the X-Wings in episode 4. I mean...
That shot around Yavin is... It's a shot in space, and it looks damn good.
Yes.
Really, Brian, the crux of the matter is that with Star Trek, Blade Runner, Close Encounters, these early versions are still available.
Yes.
I could have bought any version of them individually, most likely. But at least the box set includes them all. and Lucas's assertion that, oh, the theatrical versions that all of you fell in love with as children, those are obsolete. I was never happy with those. They're, you know, thanks to technology such as the digital eyelash, I can complete them in the manner that I always meant to do. So just forget about those versions. They're impossible to release now because my digital restoration work destroyed the original versions, which are enshrined forever in the National Film Registry, by the way.
Which, if memory serves correctly, the film was put into the National Film Registry in 1989.
Yeah.
Which means they'd have to have a record of the original negatives.
Right.
Of all three films.
Because he didn't start doing anything with that until like 95, 96.
1996 and the 1996.
Because they came out in 97. The special editions came out in 97.
That's correct.
The one thing that they touched up, and he did to A New Hope, that I thought was A, unnecessary. B, this is why we have deleted scenes. The part with Jabba.
Mm-hmm.
It's a point of contention for everybody, but mainly for me, because I realized it's something that he shot back, that there's a point in contention in the dialogue saying he wasn't going to negotiate with Jabba. Or like, I already spoke to Jabba. And then it was after the shooting, that they put the scene in.
You got a point there, actually.
And also, so it like it contradicts itself as a whole. And not only he made out Han to be a guy who second guessed himself and second thing, he made out to be a guy who doesn't initiate the attack. I know I'm speaking of Han shot first, but he doesn't initiate an attack. He does not. He's not that. The drug lord, the smuggler, the person who does not do nice things, who hangs out in a place like Mos Eisley,
yeah,
mm-hmm. and hangs out in those kind of bars and fits in. He's the chaotic good, stereotype and character tone.
I wouldn't.
He withdrew that away and he paved over it. He smoothed it out.
I wouldn't even necessarily say that he was chaotic good in the first movie. I'd say mm-hmm. he's more chaotic neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Because until he met Leia and all them, he was kind of just, you know, working all these odds.
Well, he might have fallen from four to six. He went from neutral to good. I will agree with you. Chaotic yeah. neutral. Yeah.
Because remember, the fact is,
he was supposed to be the badass. As we're staring at my Star Wars lunchbox, we have the badass, the old wise man,
the alcoholic. I'm sorry, the princess,
the alcoholic. Yeah, no, the damsel.
She's an alcoholic.
The damsel in distress that has its. He's taking a picture as I'm speaking,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to do one of those Daily Show shots that I do it of yeah. all the political. Correspondence as they're saying something mid-sentence. But anyway, and then they have the damsel in distress, which Leia was a multi-dimensional character, which thank God he didn't really fuck up Leia all that much.
Yeah.
He could have done worse. Knock on fucking wood.
I will say...
Because the movie that we saw, the movie that we just watched, that documentary, was made before the Blu-rays came out. It was almost like George saw that movie, because this movie came out in 2009. It's almost like he saw this movie. I'm going to piss him off more. And then, all of a sudden, Ewoks blink. Darth Vader says no. In Jedi. And again, in terms of the timeline. And it's just like, why are you doing this to me? And Colin and I had this discussion, because based on his speech in Library of Congress when he was trying to defend these films from going from black and white
to going to
color, and he says, well, you know, we can't make these people like with new actors with fresher faces. You know, it's a new medium and you know, the mess with this artwork, and he was considering it wrong. And Colin were like, well, maybe this is a conspiracy theory, which I'm not believing in, and like I say, anyone who's ever dealing with conspiracy theorists, just out conspiracy them. Just be like, oh, the moon, the flag's waving, man. You know, there's no wind on the moon, man. Open your mind. You believe in the moon? And so, anyway, this conspiracy theory that George actually, in his affluence, purposely messed those things up to prove a point to Congress just so they have people stop retouching their work. He says, I turned something, I made this really awesome, I put it up here, and now I'm going to ruin it and show exactly what I was saying.
I mean, dude, that right there has got to be the mechanisms of an eagle, megalomaniacal fucking
the emperor,
genius.
Not Darth Vader.
Because,
the emperor.
Yes.
Please
correct also, me. I have one. I'm sorry. What was that I was going to say? Fuck. Go on.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did you guys mention this already on
we mentioned
for the Phantom Menace 3D?
Yeah. And that was where we first got into this discussion, and it's, I mean, that... That documentary only makes it seem more and more plausible.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, okay, we'll go back to it in a second, but yeah, it was the first time I heard that, because I think Colin mentioned that to me. He mentioned that the speech that he gave to the Library of Congress, correct? The Library of Congress?
No, he gave it to the Congress, and then I tried looking for it at Library of Congress. And
he was trying to pull some audio. Apparently nothing was recorded.
He redubbed it.
Yeah, he probably would have redubbed it.
I gotta make changes to it.
Have Morgan Freeman say it.
Hello, I'm Morgan Freeman.
I will say one thing that I didn't like, and this has nothing to do with what he's done to the movies. This is just what happened in like A New Hope. But did anybody else get the impression that Carrie Fisher was trying to be English in the very beginning, and then she kind of just said, fuck it.
Yeah.
I do detect. Yeah, it may not be Kevin Costner-esque, but in Prince of Thieves, but it definitely had a slight, subtle English accent in the beginning, and then it fell off towards the end. Not like Kevin Costner, where he had it full fledged. Have some fucking tea, you know, English, like the Englishman and the patient.
Bloody wanker.
Yeah, bloody wanker, almost Cockney accent,
Sean.
And then at the end, it's country.
Well, if I may make a point here. The reason why it sounds like that is because all the interior shots, you know, the Death Star and the ships, they were shot in a soundstage in England.
In England,
yeah.
And so she was surrounded by people from England day in and day out.
That's understandable.
And so you just pick up the accent. You don't even
I was talking about Kevin Costner saying it wasn't Kevin Costner.
He's bringing that point up.
But it's not that.
Right, he's bringing that point up.
Yeah.
I'm telling him.
I know. I'm just trying to relate.
I'm just saying, it's so noticeable in one scene. For instance, she's like...
The first scene.
No. Darth Vader. Only you could be so bold. The Imperial Senate will not distill for this. It's like, wait, what the fuck happened? You took a breath and all of a sudden it's an American accent. It was hilarious. Like,
so, the people versus George Lucas is... I don't watch a lot of documentaries, but I really did like this one. It was funny, it was insightful, and it was also... relatively even-handed. I'm not used to seeing that from documentaries. Maybe I just watched too much Michael Moore, but...
that makes sense.
My recommendation would be, if you are at all interested in Star Wars, and especially at all interested in the controversy about the changes of the re-edits, or any of George Lucas's other shenanigans, this is definitely worth seeing. It provided me a sense of closure. I mean, I was a George Lucas apologist for most of the run of the prequels. I convinced myself I really liked Phantom Menace at one time, and then with the second one, I liked it until like a month later, and I started thinking about the plot.
There's a deleted scene where Yoda, as he's fighting Count Dooku, he says, "Whoop, whoop, 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 whoop."
Even before that, it's like the plot of Attack of the Clones is that.
Makes no sense.
Queen Amidala is their attempts on her life. So Jango Fett, who is a bounty hunter but also an assassin on the side, is ordered to assassinate Padme. So he sublets this to another assassin who's a shapeshifter, and the shapeshifter woman does not use her shapeshifting talent in any beneficial way to attempt to assassinate her.
I repressed her.
So, it was almost that was an aside. It was like, what?
Her choice of assassin is a poisonous centipede that is delivered by a robot to her to Padme's bedroom, which has enormous, you know, full poster glass windows. A centipede, which is a life form, so her Jedi boyfriend, who's outside, senses the new life form in her room. Whereas the droid could have just had a should have had a bomb on it, and that would have taken her out.
Yeah. And so the equivocal logic is non-existent.
Dude, it's Attack of the Clones.
And then it's
Attack of the Clones.
So and Obi-Wan makes Jango Fett at the scene of the crime, and later he finds out that the 20 years ago this Jedi commissioned an army of clone troopers and then died under mysterious circumstances before telling anybody, and he goes there and finds out that all these clones are cloned from Jango Fett, the Padme's believe it assassin, and so he says to himself, well, that nothing fishy about this, I guess we'll take this clone army.
Audio popping.
By the way, that guy who played Jango Fett also plays Abin Sur in Green Lantern. Just pointing that out.
Nifty.
Yeah.
So for the second one, it started to hurt my head, and then the third movie came out. I'm like, please, you know, have this make everything up to me.
Kind of did.
And when Darth Vader was born and he whined to the heavens that his dear wife was dead, and then you find out, and then Padme gives birth to her twins and is really happy for that, and then just keels over dead, and the medical droid the medical professional of the Star Wars universe says, I'm sorry guys, she died of a broken heart. That is when my appreciation of the prequels died of a broken heart.
Yeah. My issue. So my entire my fiery like I hated almost more so, but take second place to Jar Jar, because Jar Jar is the number one thing I hate about the prequels.
I can take a wild guess of what it is.
Whoa.
Midichlorians?
No. Oh, that's mm-hmm. in the top three Pod also.
Raging?
No. Fucking Anakin Scott, Hayden Christensen playing Anakin Skywalker. I made a film. I made a little stupid video. I will say that it's not a film. To call it a film is to an insult to cinema. I made this thing just to point out how whiny Anakin is. It's like they're like, all right, we're creating this character of who Anakin is based off of your writings and what kind of attitude he has. Well, let's have some research. So they'll clip together each portion of Luke Skywalker in the original trilogy. And he'll watch that, and he'll watch the dailies. And he gets to the first part where Luke opens his fucking mouth, and he whines. And it's like as if he cut it off and he didn't watch it anymore, and then he based it off of that one fucking scene. Exactly. And that's the attitude of Hayden Christensen. All he does is whine. He just there's the one
he's
dimension.
He's holding me back.
The one mention is holding me back. He does this. I'm jealous. And he goes all the way up to the last fucking part where he still has the fucking attitude, even though he's supposed to be fucking badass.
Yeah.
And
you underestimate my power.
And then when they're casting for this thing, and they're like, George, why did you pick Hayden Christensen? Why did you pick him? I sense the dark side in this guy. I'm like, no, what you sense was the equivocal thing of wood. Yes, it's cedar. It's cedar. It smells nice, but it's still fucking wood. Wooden acting that doesn't go anywhere.
I will say I love you with my lovey love of love.
Yes, I will say this much.
I'm getting riled up about this. This is something I had pumped up.
Settle down, Beavis. I want to get a question answered on this, okay? All right. When I saw episode 3 in theaters, right?
It's bullshit.
Who... I'm gonna tell you guys this. By the way, I saw episode 3 in theaters.
I saw it in theaters too.
When Anakin did that backflip and Obi-Wan just lopped his legs off.
Right.
I stood up and I cheered. I was like, yes! Vindication! Vindication!
Stop fucking whining!
I remember that, and I would have joined in on you in that in spirit, except that I was surrounded by like 8-year-old kids. Who were shrieking in horror as Darth Vader like catches on fire and melts in the lava.
Maniacal laugh.
Seriously. Oh my god.
So like the my main problem is that he didn't pick the right actor for the job. He sensed darkness, but really the kid couldn't act.
Let me ask you
what time are we running on?
We're on 22 minutes. Let me ask you a question, Sean. Let me go around the room, and I also have something to say before I guess we move on.
Yeah.
But if you had the choice, who would you cast as old Anakin?
As old Anakin.
Not Sebastian Shaw. I'm talking in the prequels.
Talking adult Anakin.
Yes, adult Anakin. Older Anakin. Not, you know, are you an angel Anakin? I'm talking, you know, my parents are dead. And...
I'm trying to picture who I would, but the thing is, like, whoever I pick, it's not gonna equivalent to the pedestal that we all set this original trilogy upon.
I got one.
Ooh.
Who played Xavier in First Class?
Oh, that guy.
James Marsters.
We're talking about the timeline. The timeline in which he made those three. But if you would have picked him, how young would he be?
That he would have been about, let's see.
Well, he's only in his 30s. I mean...
I gotta ask this. Who is the kid from Sequest?
Jonathan Brandis.
Brandis
died in 2000.
He was up for the role, and he lost it, and shortly thereafter, he committed suicide. Jesus.
Yeah, it was like, I think that, and then he did a scene in Hearts War, which got cut.
Mm-hmm. What if he didn't have depression, and he actually got the role?
He'd still be alive.
I'd be willing.
Thanks a lot, George. You killed Jonathan Brandis. Bastard.
I have to say, you know who I think might have been a good Anakin. Go ahead and call bullshit on this one, but I think Zachary Quinto. It's different. I understand that, but I think he would have been a good Anakin. I know he's an awesome Spock, but he would have probably been a pretty good Anakin.
He's also a pretty good deranged supervillain.
Yeah,
from Heroes.
I know.
I'm thinking of, actor gets in my mind. And people are like, this reaction, I don't know how you're going to react to this. Edward Norton. It's the only, the actor that popped up in my head. I couldn't get it out of my head.
If he were younger, that'd be perfect.
Yeah, I'd agree. If he was younger,
I remember in 2003, was that when Red Dragon came out?
Yeah. Right around then.
Yeah.
He would have been old.
He was like 35.
Old. Yeah, he was too old.
He
was in his late 20s when he did American History X, and that was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, it goes to show that, he picked him, but he could have picked better.
To be honest,
there's unknown actors out there that you could have picked unknown. And it would have been perfect.
Could have picked me, for fuck's sake. God,
to be honest with you, Sean, it's a good question to ask. I really can't think. I never thought about this this concept before. Like, as much as I despised Christensen in the role, I don't know who else I would have chosen in instead.
Well, it's because he's left such a negative, indelible mark on us that it's hard to picture that role without it being him in it. And it just
but he engraved it in the forced silhouette. In the DVDs, in the not the special edition, but in the other ones, he just put Hayden Christensen over the other guy.
That pissed me off.
Yeah, that made me mad too.
That really pissed me off.
Moving on. Watch the movie. If you at least I think somewhat differently or even the same, still watch it.
I will say,
People vs. George Lucas on Netflix.
I will say one last thing about that. The creator driven content on that was amazing. The fan stuff was amazing.
Yes,
the editing was amazing.
Which I also wanted to mention is that the documentary is backscored by a lot of really loving fan movies and parodies. There's always something really really humorous going on the screen, and. It didn't become distracting until the singing in the rain part. They were talking about some of the drier literary types were talking about how, you know, art is never finished, it's only abandoned, and thus, you know, it's if Leonardo da Vinci came back from the past and said, oh, I really meant to change to give Mona Lisa a different mouth, let me get into the Louvre and fix that, everyone would say no. And they're discussing this, and then they out of nowhere, there's Singing in the Rain.
A new adaptation by George Lucas with all new digital sound.
And there's a scene of, God, Dick Van Dyke?
No, Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly is dancing around with the umbrella. Gene Kelly is dancing with his umbrella, and red and green laser bolts are deflecting off the umbrella. This comes out of nowhere, and I had to ask Sean to pause Netflix because I was dying of laughter. I want an animated GIF of that, so I can use that as my avatar
The way that they did that, I mean, they were going into something else, and it just kind of came up as an aside, and it was just like
it just hit you. You didn't expect it. That's what was so funny.
It's kind of like this. It's kind of like you're at church, and all of a sudden, a clown walks by. It's like. What the fuck is this?
Passes through the offering.
Something.
The body of Christ.
It's just that I will always think of that whenever I think of Singing in the Rain. Now it is now the greatest Singing in the Rain pop culture reference of all time. I'm sorry, A Clockwork Orange. There's a new king in town.
Dude, he's just spinning around this umbrella, and all these like lasers are bouncing.
If only there had been the actual laser firing sound effects from Star Wars.
There probably was in the original version.
What I loved was how he deflected most of them, but all of them were kind of like doing the whole stormtrooper bouncing off to the left and right.
Stormtrooper aim.
Stormtrooper aim.
Anyway. So check it out on Netflix. It's a really intuitive movie, and it checks into all the stuff that we had issues as nerds and as fans of Star Wars. All
right. Well, before we move on to the next topic, I just wanted to very briefly just take some time out of the podcast to give a shout out to some friends over at another podcast. Give a shout out to another friends at another podcast called Fear the Boot. We'll provide the link, I believe, or mm-hmm. we're not. Fear the Boot, they're a role-playing podcast based out of St. Louis, Missouri. Right now, they are just finishing up Fear the Con 5. Now, I had the opportunity to go to Fear the Con 4 last year, and I had a fucking awesome time. I mean, there was beer there was food, there were games, gamers. They actually had a cigar smoking session there. They had all kinds of stuff, and they showed us around the town of St. Louis, and we had a wonderful time, and I just wanted to, you know, say to Dan Reppinger, Mikey Mason, Tim, all you people that I met last year, sorry I couldn't come out this year. Money's kind of tight, but I'm with you in spirit, and I hope to be there next year. I hope you had a great time. And I know that KC Campbell, you made some awesome brew there. You're serving it right now. I wish I could have had some. So I hope you have a great time. I hope you get home safe, and let's hope that you have another Fear the Con 6. So moving on.
Moving on to, I guess I'll probably move on to what we saw, and I think everyone's here saw it, and I know it's kind of a late review, The Muppets.
The Muppets. Mm-hmm.
The Muppets, the recent adaptation. Very, very good. Mm-hmm. They all the right notes they hit, and they definitely used what I thought was so funny in Muppet Treasure Island. And in there's the other Muppet movie, Muppet Christmas Carol, and they use that one thing where they break the fourth wall, and they did it so well. I mean, one could argue they did it too much, but I don't think that's possible because it's the Muppets. But every time they did it, it didn't feel pushed. It felt like it was natural. Like of course they would, it felt natural.
The new Muppet movie to me is meta-textuality incarnate.
Yes.
I have never seen a movie that is this meta that still works as a movie this well. Like, the Scream movies, the first one was interesting, the rest of them got on my nerves. But the Muppets just rides that balance so incredibly well. I don't really know where to start with this. But I can say that the plot of the movie is the world doesn't care about the Muppets anymore. They haven't made a movie in like 11 years up to this point,
which is true.
And people have forgotten, you know, what they were and what their brand of comedy was defined by. I'm like, that's just what's happened in the real world.
And
ain't that nutty? And while the real plot of the movie, I have to say, is kind of trite, actually, that a rich Texas oil man named Tex Richmond is out to is out to buy the property of the old dilapidated Muppet Show theater.
Chris Cooper, yes.
And he's, because he's drilling for oil underneath it. Like, in this day and age, I'd say it's like there's an untapped oil field underneath the old Muppet Show theater. I'd be like, tear that shit down, man. I'm tired of paying $4 a gallon.
We got oil here.
You know?
I don't care. But, I don't care if you did Manamana. Give me the oil.
But of course, the Muppets find out about this and they're horrified. So they all band together again after going their separate ways a decade ago, and they put on a show.
And in doing so, they also kidnap Jack Black.
Basically, doing exactly what they did in Muppets in Manhattan.
Pretty much.
One could argue it's the same culpable plus oil and Chris Cooper, but. I just thought it was
awesome. The execution is so perfect in that movie that the only scene I can throw up is going back to, you know, Tex Richmond, who at that point really hadn't struck me as being that interesting of a villain. Like, he's such a complete straw man of a villain. And
until he has his number.
They go to his office to talk to him about reneging on the contract, and he responds by busting out into a rap.
Chris motherfucking Cooper, busting out to a rap.
I'm not really a connoisseur of rap, but I don't think it was that great of a rap.
For real, Chris.
But it just comes out of nowhere.
And you're not expecting this guy who's played the dad in October Sky. The coal miner.
Or the homophobic dad from American Beauty.
Or the renegade agent who brainwashed Matt Damon in the first Bourne film.
Oh. Exactly. Like, this guy has played so many serious roles that, you know, like, seeing him inside this comedic stage, you're just staring at it like your grandmother just busted out into the MC Hammer dance.
but even better for me.
Exactly.
God.
Same reaction.
God, get that picture out of my head, please.
Just settle down on me. Yeesh. But better for me is the denouement of that scene in which he trots out the Muppets, the really low rent
Muppets for hire.
The Muppet just
the Reno Nevada,
the Penny Dreadful knockoff. Of the Muppets that Fonzie was introduced with earlier in the movie, he trots them out and says, "Yes, you see, I'm not only getting your theater, but I'm also getting your names, and I'm going to give your names to these fine gentlemen because, after all, they are a colder, more cynical Muppet, perfect for this colder, more cynical age."
Which kind of is true.
And I'm saying to myself, like, "Oh my God, I'm agreeing with the villain." it's not that I'm in rapt agreement with him, but it's like I can totally see where he's coming from this.
I can totally buy that. You know, it's
and the lady exec that was like. Punch the teacher? Like the show that was on currently?
And teacher fun!
Yes, yeah, I almost forgot about that in
Leslie, motherfucking
Leslie. And Leslie Chow was the host. I am teacher fun!
What? I completely forgot about that the main characters of the movie, Jason Segel's Muppet character and his human brother and his girlfriend Amy Adams, right, come from this idyllic Pleasantville like town called Small Town America.
Yeah,
and it's so saccharine and wonderful. There's
Pleasantville after the racism thing.
She's a teacher, and her last day of class before spring break, she says, "Oh, kids, I know that spring break is starting, so there won't be any school next week." And all the kids go, "Aww," but that's okay because the week after that, school will be resuming again. Yay!
I was like, what kind of fucking drug-filled world are you kids living in?
It's so adorable!
You could be the greatest A student in the world.
She was fixing a car in the middle of the fucking classroom. An old jalopy! Fixing an old jalopy in the middle of the classroom, and the kids were intently looking. She was like, a woman fixing a car, and she comes out of the car, clean, nothing there.
There's like no oil on her fingers at all.
And the
like,
thing
like,
is,
bullshit.
It was blatant enough and honest enough to where you're like, yeah, they did it on purpose.
This is the world that the protagonist of this movie represents, and it seems so hysterically alien to me, but I still end up rooting for them, and I end up rooting against seeing a hard-ass, more hard-bitten Muppet.
Yeah. Like, my thing was, like, obviously...
Here's these flowers. Sorry, they're messed up because I was doing a dance number.
I mean, to talk about it breaking the fourth wall is kind of like analyzing the movie in of itself, because this movie breaks the fourth wall. It's what it does. That's what it does.
That's why I loved about it.
If you argue, oh, well, it breaks the fourth wall too much, it's like, well, then that's half the enjoyment of the fucking movie.
And it pleases the people that watch a lot of films and people that actually like good movies. And you look at this and you take sure enjoyment out of cueing in homages to other films and to how films are made, almost like Jean-Luc Godard did in A Beau Des Soufflés, Breathless, almost like he did with the other French films, and he referenced these other films in the French culture. It's the same here with American films, and it's referencing others as well.
Well, did you also notice how it happens to be a fan of CBS? Because you have not only Jason Segel, but then you have Sheldon Cooper, and you also have NPH.
You gotta pay for it somehow. That's all I gotta say.
So, I was actually reading up on IMDb, some of the facts, and actually, what was it, CDE, the station that they're doing it on? Mm-hmm. They're doing that because they couldn't actually get ABC. Mm-hmm. Even though that is the Disney company.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay.
Which makes no sense.
I still think it was funny, though. Mm-hmm. ABC, CDE.
ABC, CDE.
Telemundo.
Telemundo.
Telemundo. I can't even fathom what CDE stands for.
Canadian Direct Entertainment? I don't know.
He goes, what else is Rosetta Tart or Muppets?
Yay!
I mean, no.
That means no.
Aww.
I got an idea. Stop the car, everybody. Stop. I got an idea. And then they're driving and they have all chili dogs in their hands. Yeah, this was a great idea.
They see this star map stand and then they pull over and it's right in front of a chili dog stand. So you think, oh, they're going to stop for star map. And that's how they're going to find Kermit.
Nope, chili dogs.
Wait, they're eating chili dogs.
Want a chili dog, little buddy?
No. And that's what I said. I was like, oh, did we just warp into a Sonic the Hedgehog episode?
Yeah, not even set AM, just like regular Sonic the Hedgehog. What was the one thing I was going to say?
Brain fart.
I'm having a lot of this.
Jack Black, maybe?
No, not Jack Black. It had to do with...
Jim Parsons?
Not Jim Parsons.
Snap.
Whoopi Goldberg.
You gonna think of it?
You're
gonna think of what you're gonna say.
Oh, the Am I a Man or Am I a Muppet song.
That is great.
I want that as my ringtone.
Yes.
There are two
pieces of music. I consider myself a very manly Muppet.
Yeah. Two pieces of music that I really loved in that movie, which was Man and Muppet, which won an Oscar and was written by Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords.
Well, he's brilliant. He's by talent.
It's in good company, along with It's Hard Out There for a Pimp.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was Walter whistling.
Oh yeah. My god.
That Walter, bit was fucking crazy.
That was the Napoleon Dynamite breakdance.
Exactly.
Times 10.
Yeah. I have to say one of my favorite moments of the movie has to be when Rolf was introduced too. Mm-hmm. Just because it was such a throwaway scene. Mm-hmm.
Hey man, how come you didn't show my scene in the montage? I thought it was a real good idea. Hey Rolf, will you get back together?
Okay.
All right.
I like there's no argument. He's like, of course I'm going to be there.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
And A Flock of Chickens sing Fuck You by CeeLo Green.
Yeah.
Yes!
I was holding my stomach. Oh my god. Cluck you.
Why was Justin not here for that? He would have
lost his shit. Has he seen the movie already?
I don't know.
Yeah, he's seen it. He said it was really good. He recommended it highly to me.
By the way, Justin, we miss you.
Yeah, sorry I'm taking over your spot.
Hey, it all went downhill with them.
Listeners would be like, it's not as good. Bring Justin back.
Where's Justin? He's in Baltimore doing stuff. I don't know.
He's working.
He's got stuff to do.
He's earning money.
It's a fool's errand.
For a fool's age.
So, okay, we've seen the Muppets. We've seen the People versus George Lucas. The Avengers, obviously, we talked about. There's anything else I think that we should cover?
I wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about the way that I celebrated May the 4th.
Okay. Ah,
all right, let's hear it.
Well, that was, I decided to, after I got off work, I went ahead and traveled to GameStop and picked up Lego Star Wars 3.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, I was extremely ill this weekend, and so I was able to play that for about 9-10 hours straight yesterday for want of being able to move. So, the LEGO Star Wars games, I really did love the first two. In fact, the concept of LEGO video games, as we know them, was born from LEGO Star Wars. There were LEGO video games beforehand, and they were all pretty much garbage. But ever since Star Wars, that added this, the distillation of a beloved property into LEGO form, very very simple action exploration kind of game, in which you're building new LEGO items in the game and fetch quests, really humorous cinematic scenes, because they act out a lot of great scenes from the Star Wars movies. But the thing is that there's no voice actors, so it's all done in kind of pantomime, and they add their own, admittedly kind of kiddie spins to things. It's a bit hard for me to describe, but in the first two Star Wars games, I thought they were interesting to watch. And the one I always will remember from Star Wars 2, which was about the original trilogy, is that I hope the Star Wars fans in the audience who have not played a LEGO Star Wars game might appreciate this. They have the best depiction of the Han shoots first scene I think you could ever make. This is what happens. When Luke and Obi-Wan walk into the cantina, they see Rito and Han are sitting at the table. And Han is in his usual relaxed position with his one leg up on the table. And Rito is sitting there very civilly. But then in a moment, Rito gets up, kicks the chair behind him, spins around 360 degrees, draws his blaster from his hip, comes around and fires, and simultaneously Han just continues sitting there, and then he not appearing to move, but then he fires through the table. They both fire simultaneously. Greedo's shot whizzes right by Han's head, and Han's shot blows Greedo's motherfucking torso off. Of all the explanations for the Lucas's changes to that scene, and their importance onto, like, oh, I didn't want to make him seem like a cold-blooded killer.
He is a cold-blooded killer.
That is far and away the best depiction I could ever see, because Han kept his cool under pressure. Greedo got angry and flourished around unnecessarily to reach for his gun to shoot him. And you can believe that he missed from 2 feet away, because he was pirouetting like a ballerina for much of it. So it's like that's... And I'll always remember that.
It kind of cracks me up as his greatest line. His Han's greatest line in the entire the original trilogy franchise was ad-libbed.
I know.
I was like, I love you. I know. I was like, that's totally him.
Should we
keep it in your pants?
Yeah, I've heard stories.
He's not wearing any pants.
No, I've heard stories that the script was said, "I love you too."
Yeah,
and
that was the script.
Yeah.
That was the actual line.
Of course, that would be Mr. George Lucas. What?
I love you. I love you too.
Wooden
dialogue. The second best line. Greedo's like, "I've been waiting for this a long time." Yeah. I bet you have.
Well, I was going to go back to, like, because what he was saying about in the video game, how, like, Greedo was brandishing his gun and all that. It kind of goes back to Indiana Jones, where that guy's, you know, trying to fight Indy in the crowd, and he's, like, got the sword and all that. What does he do? Pulls out the gun. Psh, done.
Nice.
It's like...
I'm told that was improvised because... I thought that was improvised because Harrison Ford... had diarrhea, and he didn't feel like jumping around with a sword, so he just shot him.
He looks like it because he's sweating so much. He looks like he's on set, and he's like, "There's not a porta-john in sight."
All right, I think we're gonna get wrapping up here. Right. Before we do wrap up, let's get some plugs going on. Okay, go to BNGM Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at BGN Podcasts. Go to facebook.com/BGN Podcast. Like us if you haven't already. I mean, we're up to like 150 to 150, 354, somewhere in that range. We're in the range of likes. We want to see it improve. And the most of all, what you do, if you take away anything from this plug segment, go to indiegogo.com/castwavestudios. By May 24th, it's that's when the day expires. That's yes. when the thing's no longer, and we're not even touching our goal. So spread the word, toss us $5. You'll get your name mentioned in an episode, and you'll be like, hey, I contributed towards that thing.
Yes. And may the 24th be with you.
Yes, yeah, may the 24th be with you, and may that date not pass by you without you donating to us, and because we surely need it just to keep this thing running, because we're only doing this on our pockets, which are very, very empty.
Yes. Also, be sure once again to give a listen to our buddies over at For the Boot.
Yes.
Very good, very, very awesome guys. They deserve the listens too. Also, take a listen to some of the stuff that we have coming out this week, because we got some pretty good stuff coming out, I would say.
And also, I want to let you guys know, please go on iTunes if you haven't already and rate and review. We haven't really gotten to this before because people are like, well, I don't know if I should rate and review it. I don't know.
Should I not?
McLavin. And it's like, hey, just rate, review, 5 stars preferably. And then that's it. So, as usual, or not usual, because I'm subbing for Justin.
Oh, nice and chubby baby!
I'm Sean Holmes.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Brian Massey.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
And we are boldly going nowhere.
Oh, nice and chubby baby!
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. It's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife. And isn't it ironic, don't you think?